This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by Poe's Magic Conference, which is coming up in Baltimore, Maryland, August 21st through the 24th. And for more information, you can go to posemagicconference.com. There you can register. You can see some of the talent that's going to be there. You can also get contact information for the hotel and the great rate they've got and everything. Anyhow, all that information will be on the website, and it promises to be another great convention. I have attended this in the past and have won an award. Actually, I won the Blackstone Award a few years ago when I was at the conference. It is a fun time and something completely different. And later in this podcast, we talk with Vince Wilson, who is the organizer, and he will tell you more about that. But this week, we are going to be talking with not one, but two people. You get Keith Fields and his wife, the Lady Sarah. Combined, they are the co-chair for the IBM National Contest Committee. And as such, have some suggestions for you as we start to get into this magic convention season. Some of you may be holding back and thinking about competing in some conventions somewhere that might be near you, or perhaps even traveling a long distance just to be in the contest. Well, he's got some suggestions as to why you should compete and how to go about it. And Keith has, again, speaking from his experience, having won some awards, and they both have some suggestions that I think will be helpful here this week. And speaking of conventions, I do want to point out there were a couple of errors as we were talking. He didn't have the times and dates in front of him, but just to confirm or to clarify, the Michigan Magic Day that he talks about is actually going to be May the 16th and 17th. I think he said it was going to be May the 7th. Anyhow, the correct date's May the 16th and 17th. And also the IBM convention, which will be held in Houston, is going to be July 9th through the 12th. So that's going to be bumping up against the FISM convention, which will be held later. And I'm looking forward to attending that one. I'm not going to be going to the IBM convention personally, but I will be giving you daily reports from FISM as we have done in many years in the past. We also not only get two people who are talking this week, but also talking about two different subjects. One is, as I mentioned, was talking about convention contests, but also talking about theaters. In particular, this couple has put together the Magic Soiree in the Detroit area, and trying to find a place where they can put on their show and perform and have a relationship, a partnership with the management is always kind of a challenging feat, I think, for anybody. And so they talk a little bit about that, as well as the type of show that they put on, and hopefully encouraging some of you out there who might be thinking about putting on your own show to maybe go and find a place and to talk with someone who perhaps in a hotel or a country club or some resort or something that might be near you where you might be able to put on your own show and sell tickets. And they talk a little bit about all that then too. So there's a lot to talk about. It's not just the contest, but also talking about putting on a show and where to do it and how to find it. A little bit of great information in here. Actually, a whole lot of great information in this episode, as there is in every episode, which is why I know that you keep coming back, and we thank each and every one of you for doing that, and also for voting for us as being the best magic podcaster in the world and the best magic newsletter. So thank you guys very much. If you go to the website at themagicwordpodcast.com, there is a place there on the website that will show you where you can click to vote, and that will help us get the attention from the judges that we need to maybe get that accolade. And in tour in Italy later this year. And also, if you have not yet subscribed to our pod letter, please do. When you go to the website, there should be a little thing that'll pop up, and it will allow you to subscribe to the pod letter. Okay, time to move on. Let's introduce this week's guests. So this week, again, we are going to welcome two people from the Detroit, Michigan area, although they are not originally from there, and you could tell by their accents. Please welcome my guests, Keith Fields and the Lady Sarah, here on The Magic Word.
Wow.
Today, we're going to be going to Detroit, Michigan, although from the sound of it, you might think we're actually going across the pond over to England. And in a way, we are. We're going to be talking then with Keith Fields and his wife, Sarah. Sarah's going to be joining us shortly, hopefully. But I want to talk with Keith because as people compete for contests, whether it's going to be for a magic convention or whether it's on a local level or whatever, Keith has been working as, along with Sarah, as being the contest chairman for the International Brotherhood of Magicians. And so I thought perhaps they might have a unique perspective. Plus, we could talk a little bit about conventions kind of in general then as well. But also, Keith and Sarah have been running their own theater for a while, having nothing to do with contests, but everything to do with actually performing. And that's another thing, that it seems like there are a lot of different venues around the country where people can go. One of the more recent ones that have opened has been the House of Magic that Mark D'Souza had opened out in Philadelphia. Anyhow, we're going to get to a lot of stuff, try to cover as much as we can in this next hour. So please welcome my guest right now, Mr. Keith Fields. Hey there, Keith. How are you, sir?
Excellent. Thank you very much for that lovely introduction. And so I'm quite interested to see where we end up.
Yeah, I'm trying to make you sound even better than you are. And you are fantastic. You know, I feel honored to have you as a friend. I've always enjoyed your performances and also just our time to chat.
And I have enjoyed many a Martini Thursday with you, sir. So, it's, yeah, the feeling is mutual.
Well, thank you. I wanted to talk, first of all, I guess, a little bit about what I mentioned about conventions. There are conventions going on throughout the year, and whenever one ends, it seems like that there's another one that begins. The one that recently had ended was the
Winter Carnival.
Winter Carnival, that's right.
Yeah, that was gosh, the 50th. That's really sad, the demise of the Winter Carnival, because that was one of those unique conventions. It had a unique feel about it, and it was always a lot of fun. Very sad to see that one gone.
Very much so. And it was more than just a regional convention. But So one of the things is, and they had more attendance at that final convention than they had at any previous convention, regardless. I mean, I think their highest registration to date had been something like about maybe 350 or 400. This year, they, I believe, topped 500. So it was kind of amazing. But again, everybody knew that was going to be the last time to go.
And it was very much one of those sort of times that people will talk about in the future.
Because, I think so. When it was interesting, and I may have mentioned this on the podcast before, but I don't know, when I was emceeing there at the end, when we're all taking our final bow and the lights come on, the house lights come on, and I was looking at the people standing and applauding, and I had never seen anything like this or experienced something. It was a feeling that no one wanted to leave. It was like, well, where do we go? What do we do? This is the last convention, and we just hold this experience as long as we can. It's like, usually people are trying to run towards the door and get to the parking lot or get to dinner, get back to the babysitter or whatever.
As you said, it was the end of an era. But, you know, that although it's always sad when something ends, the point you made a minute ago is very important. You know, one door closes, another one opens. And it's very important that we look forward. There's still so many great positive things happening in the world of magic. And, you know, and we need to make more great positive things happen. And, you know, the Winter Carnival, I think it was 50 years, wasn't it, something?
Correct. It was right at 50 years.
Mm-hmm. 50 years, which is an amazing achievement to do 50 years of conventions. To, you know, any team that achieves that has done phenomenally well. So, but things move on, don't they? And, well, you know, it's what's coming next that's the most exciting.
I know you've also, you performed at so many conventions yourself, which is why I really want to talk with you about conventions a little bit and the future of the conventions, but also, one was the Midwest Magic Jubilee, which was in St. Louis. I know you performed there as well. And as that kind of ended, it transitioned into what's now is the Gateway Close-Up Convention. So it's really more focused towards close-up as opposed to stage and contest. And it has taken a different look. And it this year, I understand, from what I heard, actually had doubled in their registration from this year from last year. So more people are getting to, I mean, it's a wonderful convention too. I didn't get to attend this year. I had looked forward to it, but I'm trying to cut back on attendance here at the conventions. But that's a good one. My point being is that's a new one that had kind of entered the convention roster.
I think it's interesting because the magic world has changed as well. I mean, close-up magic, you know, 100 years ago, it didn't really exist as a sort of a concept, as an art form. We had close-up tricks, but it certainly wasn't a major part. Mm-hmm. All the magic history of that time is very much about, you know, big stage shows and big touring shows, because that was the market. And it seems that close-up magic is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And so conventions which have that as their focus are inevitably going to do well. They're going to attract people which other conventions won't attract. And I think that's definitely, there's definitely space in the market for more people, you know, concentrating on how close-up magic can become a bigger thing. Not that it isn't huge, but
right,
it's obviously still growing rapidly.
Well, when you stop and think also about the attendees, it's getting to be more and more expensive for to attend a convention.
Yeah.
Whereas the convention organizers are trying to keep this still at the same prices, pricing is what they have forever, it seems like, but it's getting harder and harder to do that, certainly. I mean, with the hotel costs going up and everything else, the transportation and et cetera.
And I know from my my work with the IBM that the hotel costs are really hitting everyone that's trying to organize a convention over 2 or 3 days.
Right.
You know, it's something we're all struggling with.
Well, and that's part of the issue, I believe, is that for the most part, those who attend are hobbyists or amateurs or those who are not making a full-time living of doing magic. And so this really is their vacation, if you will. And so they're talking their spouse and family to coming in. I know that the IBM and others organizations who rotate will try to have a destination city, a place that would be appealing to take their family and something for them to do. If you're in the same place year after year, you have to have something else, which makes people want to come. And that kind of gets to my point that if you actually spend some time looking at the demographics of those who attend conventions, typically they attend one convention. You find that they're not like me, who's going to 8 or 10 or 12, 15 conventions or whatever a year. They may only have the time, money, and resources actually to go to one a year.
We only have so many convention dollars to spend.
And, that's true.
And I think it's true in the bigger market as well. There's only so many convention dollars out there, and there's more and more people trying to get those convention dollars, you know, and the
true
big ones, small ones, all sorts.
The organizers are trying to all go after the same market, basically saying, hey, come to our convention, come across the country. I mean, up to Oregon, or come down to Orlando or wherever it's going to be. It's hard to draw people across the country. So that's one thing, certainly. But as you had mentioned, the hotel costs and everything else really are going up and up. And so it gets to be more difficult to spend the hotel and then even parking your car. I mean, that can be almost as expensive as what it used to be to spend the night. Hotel.
Yeah, surprise expenses that you forget about. Yeah, it's it is frustrating sometimes, but it's, you know, I think it's so worth it in the end. I can look back to the conventions that I was attending when I first started in magic, and I can look back to how much I learned and grew through that experience as a performer, as a magician, and as a person as well. I think, you know, mixing with lots of different people, that's a good experience for everyone as well. But for me, the learning experience at conventions was so important, which is why I'm a huge supporter of conventions now, because, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, there's no one there that I want to see because I've seen all those people before. But it's not just about the performers. You know, a convention is what the attendees make it. And a group of people together who love magic and want to share magic will create a great convention. That's all.
Just occurred to me that is kind of like, that's your church, because a church is a community of like believers and people who you like to be with and who share that same fellowship, and you enjoy talking about whatever that happens to be. So I think if you are at a magic convention, there again, it is a community you like to go and be with and enjoy going to that location. If it is like year after year, like I mentioned about, for an example, the Gateway Close-Up that's going to be in St. Louis, you know, year after year, it's not rotating like the TAUM would move around from Austin to Houston to Dallas or wherever, kind of a thing, you know.
Yeah, and we are, the IBM convention is rotating around. I think there has been some talk about, you know, the rotating around not necessarily being always a good thing. And there's been some talk recently about picking 3 or 4 main centers and actually rotating around 3 or 4 centers, because that means we can do better deals with the hotels and work out better for everyone. So that is hopefully in the future, and hopefully in the near future. I know with one of the hotels, I think it might be the Houston hotel we're in this year, I think we might be coming back to Houston in 3 or 4 years' time. Mm-hmm. And by signing that deal, we get a better deal for everyone and better guarantees and better rates. So, you know, unfortunately, putting on a convention does cost a huge amount of money. Right. It's very expensive flying the act in, and people don't realize that one of the biggest expenses is the sound and the lights and the staging hire and all that sort of thing. And we have to have people who know what they're doing running that. You know, you can't just grab people off the street and say, you know, while you're here, look after this camera, because you don't get the images as a magician we need. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on in running a convention. And I'm only just really beginning to learn that, because we're organizing Michigan Magic Day coming up fairly, fairly soon. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time that I've been sort of really hands-on in organizing a whole convention with a team of people, obviously. But that's hugely exciting. Have you ever been to a Michigan Magic Day?
I have not. And that's another one of those that rotates like the TOM does around Texas, that Michigan Magic Day rotates around Michigan, doesn't it? At different locations every year.
It's run by a different ring. There must be about half a dozen rings in Michigan. And Michigan Magic Day, I think Michigan Magic Day has been going for quite a few years. I can't remember how many, but it sort of faded out a little bit over the COVID years. And we've been sort of, it's one of those things to get the ball rolling again and get people excited about it every year. And it's happened a couple of times, but the last two haven't been very well attended. It's been a bit of a struggle to get it going again. It looks like we're going to have a really good time. It's May the 7th in Michigan. It's in just north of Detroit, sort of in the suburbs of Detroit. And I think we're already over 100 tickets sold. So for a small regional convention, that's pretty good going.
And that's typical, isn't it? I mean, about 100 people.
Well, the ones that are established, and I mean, if when you get to that level of people, you're pretty sure guaranteed to have a really good day. You know, you've got enough critical mass to make something good happen.
Do you have contests, by the way, at that convention?
Not in this one. This is a one-day convention. We talked about having a one-trick contest, but with the other things we've got planned, we've got Steve Valentine is our headline act, who's doing a lecture, and so we wanted to give him plenty of time, obviously, and David Parr's coming as well. And then we've got a Michigan history talk and various other shows. So we've got a very full day, and it was kind of, we had to work out what we weren't going to do when we started planning it. There was, you know, we couldn't do everything we wanted to do. The wish list was just too long. And the contest was one of the things that did drop out. But we have, in our night before party, we're going to have a sort of an open mic session to sort of replace it, which is going to be a sort of big free-for-all. We've got a couple of guest acts coming in to do the night before party as well. But then we're having a free-for-all open stage, open mic thing, which is going to be great fun.
We in Texas have been having the Texas Association of Magicians Convention for like 75 years or something, very long time.
I was there recently because you did the FISM one, didn't you, last year?
That's right. And because of that one of the ideas was we were going to be going back to the same location year after year. We thought we could make a better deal that way, like what you were talking about. Mm. But unfortunately, the expenses got to be greater than anticipated. And as a result, they're not going to be holding it at the same hotel or the same location, but it'll still be in North Texas, going to be in Dallas. But the point is, they'd lost so much money, they said they're going to be cutting back from normally having it on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, instead of like a four-day convention. They're going to be having it basically a day-and-a-half convention. So it's going to be like on a Friday night, and then Saturday we'll have activities and more of an old-fashioned type of a picnic, like we are going back to our roots type of a thing. It was we even talked about, should we just cancel it all together and not have it? Because we were having to dip into the same pool of people who had assisted last year, and I'm sure that they had kind of gotten to the point, like, you know, we're burned out. You know, that's one of the advantages of those of rotating, you know, certainly, that you get some new people who got some new ideas, et cetera. However, the point is, we also, I believe, decided not to have a contest this year, which is the first time I believe they've not done that, because we have always had a contest with a nice trophy that has been awarded for stage and close-up. But that gets me to my point about contests kind of in general. It seems that contests are important for a variety of reasons. And in fact, rather than me talking about it, why do you think contests are important? Why people should enter contests?
Yeah, I don't know anyone that has regretted entering one of these contests. Mm-hmm. I, that's the bottom line, because there are so many things that they learn from it. I'll give you an example of the two young guys that have been working with us, who you've interviewed them, so you know them as well, Dragan and Ferran Giles, who won the IBM competition about, when was it, 2 years ago? 3 years ago. But since then, the things they've gone on to are absolutely phenomenal. I mean, Ferran has been performing shows all over the place. They both performed at the Magic Castle since then, and they, you know, doing well in the competition obviously helps because they get seen by people. Dragon's managed to get on Foolless and Masters of Illusion since then. They performed at the Chicago Magic Lounge, and it's kind of put them on the map. And,
yes.
And that's what you're actually buying by doing well in a competition. What you're buying is a huge leg up in the magic world. People will immediately know who you are, and immediately you'll have that sort of fan base out there, which is really nice. But that's kind of the tip of the iceberg. That's the kind of obvious side of it. There's a lot more underwater in an iceberg, as we all know, and there's a lot more great reasons for doing a competition. I'll run a few of them. I know one of them is the friends that you make, because you are working. It's not the sort of competition where you're trying to beat other people down. It's a competition where everyone wants everyone to succeed. And some of the great friendships that have evolved through those competitions. I know Lance Burton and Matt King and Jeff Hobson all appeared in a competition. I think it was Abbott's. The three of them did Abbott's together. And they've all been great friends ever since. And it sort of started in the competition days, and they've managed to help and support each other's careers. And they're three of the, you know, greatest magicians that have worked in America over the last 20, 30 years.
Right.
And, you know, you can almost go, well, was it just the competition? No, but the competition, I bet, had something to do with it. So the friendship and the camaraderie is fantastic. Another great thing that happens through the competitions is that they actually work on a piece of magic to try and make it the best they possibly can. All too often, I think we fall into the good enough trap.
Hmm.
But when you're doing a competition, you know, you focus down on something, you drill down on it, and you're looking for those tiny little tweaks that will give you the extra 5% out of it. And if you get half a dozen of those, you know, you've got an extra 30% out of the trick. It's so important to be able to do that. And I think we don't concentrate so much on a routine unless there's a real deadline and a real reason. And you get to that deadline, and then you've got a really tight 8 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it is you're allowed. And again, that thing of working to a deadline is huge. It focuses you down, and it makes you get very, very creative and very, very productive. And that's the beauty of competitions. And that's just a couple of the advantages that I'm thinking of off the top of my head.
Yeah, a lot of people are thinking, well, I don't have a competition act. My stuff is not necessarily original or not, but I would encourage people just to enter the contest, just to get over the nerves.
Yeah.
And sometimes they think, well, I don't want to perform in front of other magicians and be judged by them. But I would suggest, first of all, that you go to the club meetings, and that way you can perform and you kind of get past that nervous part of performing in front of magicians. And then when you are competing, you're exactly right. Everything that you said, where you make new friends, you have deadlines, you can polish your act, and that you also get good feedback from the audience, you know, what works, what doesn't work, and perhaps you can be encouraged to move on. I've known how this has actually affected and influenced people's lives, that they have also then been able to take this to other things. I remember one friend of mine who has a daughter who she was a little bit shy. He got her involved, started competing, and she liked it. And then she started entering some of these young Miss Beauty teen contests or whatever, and had just come out of a shell. I mean, he said the way that she just blossomed was just amazing. Anyhow, I know that it gives you confidence, which magic does in general, but it just builds up even more confidence. With the added value, if you do happen to win, then you can say, well, I'm a winner of, and that also has some good credibility when you're trying to book a show.
Yeah. One thing we've discovered since taking over the IBM competition is talking to people. A lot of people think, they go, well, why would I do a competition? Or why should I do a competition? Or am I good enough to do a competition? And it's kind of like people almost need to be asked. People need, you need to suggest to someone, say, you know, you should do a competition. And I reckon in many magic clubs, there are people out there who, many of our rings, people would really benefit from doing a competition, but no one sort of planted that seed in them, because I think we all suffer from a bit of imposter syndrome. We all think we're not good enough, but the IBM contest is a contest for IBM members. And that's you, that's me, that's everybody. And yes, we do have professionals in it, but more often than not, most of the entries are, you know, hobbyists who have just decided to give it a go. And that's really what we want people to do, to say, give it a go. And secretly, like, you know, without, just check, no one's listening here. You know, I think this would be a very good year to give it a go. And I'll tell you why. FISM is the week after the IBM competition.
Right, you tour in Italy.
A lot of the top acts that might go into the competition, they're off the circuit at the moment. So we really do think the whole field is wide open for some new people to come in and surprise us. It's really exciting.
You kind of touch on another matter, and that is sometimes when you do compete, there may be a lot, and sometimes more often than not, a few. And it seems as conventions are continuing to go on, there are fewer and fewer competitors. So in other words, when you do win, you just happen to be the best among eight or five or however many people else are competing. So
I remember going to the IBM convention in, have you ever been to the IBM in the UK?
I have not. You mean like Eastbourne or someplace?
Eastbourne,
or?
Yeah. I remember back in the day, and I'm going back probably 30 plus years here, I remember competitions starting at 7:30 in the evening and still going on at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my goodness.
They used to have an open thing. I think they literally had sometimes 30 or 40 acts in the competition.
Wow.
And, you know, it was the whole, as a show, you know, people were talked about whether they were good, bad, or indifferent. You know, everyone was walking around the next day because the audience used to get behind them. And the thing was, when they had so many acts, there would nearly always be one trick that seemed to come up more than any other. I one year it was the linking rings. Everyone, for some reason, was doing the linking rings. And I remember one year, and I remember this because I was literally just thinking about this about a couple of hours ago. I was sitting up on the balcony, and sitting in front of us was Harry Blackstone, Junior, that is. And we were sort of screaming, the curtains would open, and there were me and a group of guys messing around and doing jokes behind him, and he was sort of joining in. The curtains opened, and this one prop, every time this prop appeared on the stage, the whole audience groaned because it appeared about seven times in this competition. And what it was an umbrella production. It was the umbrella production where you had a tube on top of a table, and you picked up the tube and showed the tube empty and put the tube back on the table, and then you reached through the tube and pulled the tablecloth up. Do you remember that illusion?
I sure do, yes.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden the umbrella started coming out. A fine trick, but seven or eight times one after another, you just get everyone's going, oh. Fun. I've just noticed that my dear lady wife has just returned from her shopping trip, and
well, bring her in.
And she's over here.
Hello, Sarah.
So just to catch everyone else up, Lady Sarah, my wife and partner here, is also the co-chair of the contest in Eastbourne. Not Eastbourne.
No, wrong.
I'm in the wrong
place,
country.
Darling.
I'm in the wrong country.
Houston.
Going up in Houston.
Summer.
Yeah. And we're both very excited to be, you know, taking part in this competition.
Right. Have you together or independently competed in contests?
Sarah's competed, not in magic contests.
I've competed in speech competitions.
Okay.
And,
you almost forgot how to say competition.
How'd you do on that?
Speech competitions.
She did very well.
Don't like to boast about my wife, but she's the regional champion or something for Toastmasters.
For Toastmasters, okay.
The link of magic. You don't know what else goes on. So yes, I've competed in speech competitions. I've coached others on speaking and how to present. And you have done magic conventions.
I've done magic competitions. I started out my career doing, one of the things I did to get stage time was doing talent shows. They had little pub talent shows in the UK. I'm going back for
a long time. Keep going.
50 odd years. I think almost 50 years. But they had a little pub talent shows where you could go on and do 10 minutes and someone would be the winner, and there'd be a $50 prize or £50 prize for the winner, and you'd go through the final, and the final would have, usually professional agents would be judging the final, and that was how I picked up my first agent, was through the talent competition market.
That happened to see you in one of the pubs.
Yeah.
Although you did get beaten once, didn't you, by a singing dog.
Yeah. A singing dog. Can you believe
it? It's kind of hard to beat. I mean, I don't think I've heard a singing dog. That's a little bit unique.
I mean, it basically went, oh, every time they got started to sing. That was that's all it did. It wasn't ventriloquism.
Bitter, darling.
Now, I've won a few magic competitions as well. I was International Street Magician of the Year in 1988, I think.
Yeah.
That's many, many years ago.
Beat John Lenihan.
No, he beat me.
Oh, did he? Yeah, right.
He was the year before. I did the Magic Circle close-up competition, which I won in about 1996 or something. Mm-hmm. But that's when I sort of retired from that market.
In fact, you know what, Scott? One of the things that we brought over when we moved to the US was that trophy from the Magic Circle. It's a coveted piece.
It is. It's called the Divano trophy, named after Divano, who invented the Divano rising
card. Sure.
Weight in it, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was actually cast. It's a cast hand with holding the rising cards. It was specially made. Scott Penrose casted them. That's right. But they're unavailable now. So he casted a series of them, and now they've gone. And there's only, I don't know how many there are in existence. I'd be interested to find out.
Their trophies. I remember Dan Sperry winning when he was a kid, winning some competitions, and he loved his trophies. Yeah. That was a coveted thing for him.
Yeah,
you'll need to take a picture of that and then send that to me so I can put it on the website so people can see that.
Yeah, so I'll do that straight after this, so you will have it. There we go.
And now for a quick word from our sponsor. Poe's Magic Conference coming up August 21st through the 24th in Baltimore, Maryland. It's a conference that you don't want to miss. If you want to add another dimension to your magic act by being able to tell stories and be memorable, this is a conference for you. You will learn all kinds of great stuff, but don't take it from me. Take it from the guy that I've got with me right now, who is my guest. He is the host, Mr. Vince Wilson. Hey there, Vince.
Hey, Scott. Thank you for having me back again.
Hey, you're welcome. So tell us more about what actually is the Poe's Magic Conference.
Poe's Magic Conference is a storytelling magic conference with emphasis on narrative structure, mentalism, and a little bit of bizarre stuff. But any magician or mentalist who wants to take their performance, take their show to the next level should come to this conference.
That's a good way of putting it. That's a good elevator pitch, I would say. So that way people can better understand exactly what it is that they're going to be getting in for. The last time I was there, Jeff McBride was the guest speaker. And this year, who have you got as the and of course, Jeff is fantastic as a storyteller. Who have you got this year who's going to wow us?
Our keynote speaker is Crystal Younglove, mostly known for her sideshow performances, but also a talented magician and a beloved performer in the Mid-Atlantic. You know, if you mention her name to any entertainment group in this area, they know who that is. And she is a phenomenal performer and is actually very involved in planning and putting together this conference this year. And we thank her for all her energy that she puts into it.
And then also you got Hiawatha Johnson.
Hiawatha Johnson Jr., we have David Parr, we have Paul Prater, Paul Nossinger, Zeke Powers, the incredible Professor BC, and a whole bunch of other performers we have not even announced yet, including local talent as well.
I think this is going to be, again, another fantastic conference. And the fact that you're holding in Baltimore, which is where the burial site is for Edgar Allan Poe, who was known as a macabre author, is phenomenal. And tell me, I understand it's just, as I recall, just a couple blocks away from the Lord Baltimore Hotel that's hosting the convention.
That is correct. Yeah, the Lord Baltimore Hotel, of course, is a historic landmark hotel in downtown Baltimore. It was built in 1928. Has a reputation for being haunted, of course, but it's also a beautiful luxury hotel filled with art pieces. The Art Deco design is incredible. The sky bar, you can actually do magic outdoors on top of the roof. And we are so excited to have everyone back again for this conference. We're really looking forward to, you know, getting this one up and running. You know, the lineup, the shows we have, including the popular gala show. Oh yeah, don't forget the Black Cat Lounge. You remember that, the after hours
yes,
event?
I do.
That,
right.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yep. So that's why the Black Cat Lounge is the reason we start late, like 10 a.m. in the morning, because we had to sleep off the Black Cat Lounge.
It's a good reason for doing that. And of course, there was a real life speakeasy that was behind the walls, and that was kind of cool the way this building was built. What?
That is correct. There's actually a secret speakeasy that was walled up for whatever reason that has been lost to history for over 70 years and is now a place that is used for wedding receptions and also secret magic, you know, meetings and that sort of thing that we host there at the Lord of Baltimore.
Well, Baltimore does have a rich history of magic. I'm going to be brief because I want to move on here just real quickly. But between when we're walking from the hotel to the Edgar Allan Poe gravesite, there is the Demons Club. Tell me something real briefly about that.
Oh, yes. The Demons Club was the one the original magic club in the United States. It predates Sam and IBM and included Thurston, Heller, Blackstone, Harry Houdini, Dante, and Alexander as regular members of this clubhouse in Baltimore City. We honor them with as they border our stage at every Poe's Magic Theater show in Baltimore City. But those were the preeminent magicians of the Golden Age of Magic, and they were all members of this Baltimore organization, Poe's Magic Club, a spiritual successor to the Demons Club.
And the building is still standing, which, as I said, is just a block or two away from the hotel.
That's correct.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Kind of cool. Well, there's so much to see and do. You want to make sure that you sign up for this conference. If you have not attended before, your magic will grow in you too by leaps and bounds, by learning how to put some storytelling into your magic and make it richer and more deeply interesting and motivating to your audience. So please check out the website at posemagicconference.com. Get information on how to register. The hotel rate has been reduced, especially for attendees. And there are other activities and things that are going to be happening all that weekend. Again, August the 21st through the 24th. You want to stay for all of it and then leave on Monday the 25th. There's just so much going on. Mm-hmm. Again, Vince, thank you very much for joining us here today and telling us about this wonderful conference.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to put this on. It's wonderful to be on the show. Scott, you are also an icon. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much, Vince. And now back to our conversation with Keith and Lady Sarah. That is an important thing, I think, also is the physical trophy that you win. And in some cases at conventions, of course, there are cash prizes that go with it. For an example, like this last year at Blackpool for the one convention, when they have like a 30,000
pounds.
Yeah.
That's like $120,000, isn't it?
Well, in Canadian.
Very quick. That's about probably about 38,000 pounds at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Not dollars.
Dollars, right.
Anyway, the point being.
Worth having.
Cash prize this year.
Yeah, we're on two. Well, there's 1,000, no, 2,000 first prize, but then there's another, there's more. I can't remember the figures.
Good. We're running the competition. We're not sure what the prizes are.
What do you know? You're just heading up the committee.
Yeah. So. There is with the IBM, there's kind of two levels. You can win the competition, which is fantastic. And if you win the competition, you'll do very well. And I think it's $2,000, but don't quote me on that. Go to IBMconvention.com/contest. You'll find all the information there. But the most important thing with the IBM competition is, of course, the gold medal and the gold cups. Now, these aren't awarded every year. They're mm-hmm. a very special thing. And if you win those, you know you've done very well. The last person to win the gold medal, I think, was Artem Shukin, who went on to win the manipulation award at FISM.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a significant prize. And that's not given out every year.
But, Scott, here's the difference this year. And, you know, we're very honoured to take this on, but we've come up with some new ideas and there's a whole committee brainstorming it. Those who make it through to make it onto the convention, to the final, we'll let you know that by the middle of May or something. I can't remember. Again, the deadline.
End of May. But, I remember that date.
But we'll also give you a mentor, somebody who will look at your act and mm-hmm. say, yep, this is something to work on, something to polish here. And these are professionals. I don't like to drop all the names that are offered to help. But
well, we can drop a couple of names because people like having their names dropped. And then we spoke to Jeff Hobson about it. And, you know, it's funny, Jeff is a very humble man sometimes. And he goes, are you sure? What can I offer? But Jeff's knowledge of comedy character is second to none in the country. Mm-hmm. And so if we have a comedy act coming through who would benefit from being linked up with Jeff, then that's the sort of people that we can link them up with. And I know
Eric Tate as well. Yeah, if you're doing a close-up
card work and something,
then he'll spend some time with you before you actually perform in Houston
yeah.
for the finals. So those are just a couple of the folks. That's an added bonus, obviously.
Well, I can give you another added bonus.
Go on then.
Another added bonus. This is another one of those things that maybe I'm saying this a bit prematurely, but I hope I'm not. But I can almost guarantee that you will be seen by the owners of the Magic Castle, because they are our guest of honor this year, the Pitchfords, and as far as we're aware, they're going to be judging the competitions as well.
Oh, great.
So
yeah.
You're guaranteed to be seen by some of the right people if you do the competition this year.
What about entering the contest? I know this is another thing, is that some contests will require you to send in a video. Some, it's kind of like you just show up. There is a cutoff. We only have X number of slots available, because you were talking about Eastbourne going on like for 12 hours or something. I'm sure they've changed that up a little bit so they don't go on quite as long. But the point is, if a group who hosts a convention is thinking about contests, or they're wanting to change up their contests a little bit, what do you suggest? Do you think they should send in videos
We have an application form. We have one for stage, one for close-up, one for youth, because there's a youth category in both of those, stage and close-up. They send that in along with a video and a headshot. And then we have a team who will check them out, watch them all the way through, and we will let you know by the end of
the review and discuss in great depth, because we want them to get better between the video submission and the actual contest. We want them to be the best they possibly can when it comes to the content.
So they will know by the end of May whether they've made the finals, and they'll know who their mentor is and all the details they need.
But do you have like a certain number also that you would cut off?
Yes, we're limiting it to 8 people, because we're trying to fit in within the show structure that we have at the convention, and it can't be an endless show. So we are limiting the finalists to 8. So all those 8 people are basically winners, which is why we're finding ways of rewarding them for achieving that. So the mentorship program is one of those things that they will get just for getting through to the final.
Right.
And that will be a huge benefit to them in itself.
Speaking of contests and also trying to get people, encouraging people to attend conventions in general, I have been talking with some people recently about the, I think, exciting thing that FISM is doing this year, and that is of adding online content. Specifically, they are recognizing people, young people, who are, in particular, who are contributing online content, like with Instagram and TikTok and YouTube and everything else, because that's where they are, because I think otherwise they're just looking at FISM fading off into the distance with a bunch of old white men, and eventually it doesn't care in when you die off. So how can you rejuvenate that? And I understand that Chris Ramsey was one of the people who spearheaded the idea of trying to, again, hit the young people where they are. What is it that you do? How can we offer something that would be of interest to you? And that is of getting them involved, who are the ones who do contribute this, as well as digital content. Like I got was nominated then for the best podcaster and different thing, you know, the newsletter and the online digital magazines, different kinds of things that have been used over the last several years. But it's like we're just now recognizing this. I just think that is a great direction to go.
And Scott, you're absolutely right. And FISM really has upped their game this year. I mean, the IBM have been running a youth program for the convention alone. Jeff McBride and all the rest of it. So youth program is vital. The other thing that FISM have done this year is a street performers competition, which is fantastic. They've really upped their game. And so therefore that goes on to the next stage, which is we're very aware that winning the IBM and being sponsored by the IBM is a way in to FISM for North America. And so we are really upping our game on that as well, and encouraging folk that you've got another 3 years now till the next FISM, and we will work with you in that time to get your act ready to open up for the North American qualifiers.
In fact, I can tell you now, the next North American qualifiers are going to be organized by us, with we are going to be all part of organizing the competition. It's going to be at the IBM convention, which will be in Vegas in 2027. Mm-hmm. And so that will be the main qualifier for FISM, which will be in 2028, which will be the next one, which I think there's a rumor it might be going back to Quebec.
Yes.
I don't think that's been...
Sorry, going back to your original point, you're right. FISM's up their game, and I believe all these groups have. So we've been in contact with the guys who run the youth program at the castle, with Mark D'Souza, who is running the competition for Sam's. We're all working together with these competitions to put a team together for North America.
Yeah.
And that's huge. In fact, I got a text only 5 minutes ago about an established act, a Michigan act, who is really interested in going in for FISM in 3 years' time. And he's sort of saying, who can I work with, working on music, working on finances? It's expensive to go into FISM.
That's true. You almost need to get someone who's a financial backer to send you. I remember a friend of mine who had won in the stage competition to move on to the next. And this was back when the convention was in Italy the last time. And he won, but he couldn't afford to ship over his illusions and his assistants and pay for all that. And so he didn't get to compete.
No. Mm. And that is expensive. And we've had those conversations with a team of us. The thing is, those acts out there need to move forward. And whether they're professionals, whether they're working regularly, whatever, to have that feather in your cap as a FISM entry is
just
huge.
Just to be a FISM, just to have represented your country in something is huge. Mm-hmm. And there are coming together now, and you know, Mark D'Souza is one of the head honchos on this, but there are coming together a team of people. So if you actually break through in competitions and you say to the right people, I'm interested in FISM, there are going to be people who are going to be there, and they are there to help.
And you can start by emailing Keith at keithfields.com.
Well, I mentioned about also the thing of having digital content. Is that something that the IBM is considering opening?
We talked about it when I first got on the IBM executive. It was one of the ideas that I pitched. So I'm really annoyed that FISM got there before us. It's just the IBM, we've got a small organizational structure, and it was one too many things for us to actually put
it. It's right, Scott, that you don't want to go off half-cocked, as it were. You know, if we're going to launch it, it's got to be good.
Yeah.
And
good point.
I love the idea of actually, you know, when we're waiting for the shows to start and we've got all these screens, I love the idea of being able to show all the entries for the online competition to the audience. So it gives us, it would give us content that we could use throughout the convention as well. So there's just one or two of the ideas that I was using. But I'm so glad that FISM have actually pulled it together. I think it's exciting for magic. It's going to put a new style of magic into that competition structure, which is brilliant.
Yeah. I think we are in a kind of a new age then right now, certainly, where it's a golden age, a new golden age of magic, we're starting to see a lot of new things like that. And one of the things also happens to be just magic theater. Speaking of Mark D'Souza, I know that he had recently opened his House of Magic in Philadelphia and had merged with Smoke and Mirrors with Danny Archer and Marty coming over and doing their show there. And that, again, had recently opened. And the two of you have been doing the Magic Soiree. So I wanted to ask you just a little bit about that, about how that kind of develops. So other people who might be interested in putting together a theater or finding a venue. And I know that you recently had to change the venue. So I'm going to turn it over to you and I'm going to shut up for a minute.
First of all, we're actually working Mark D'Souza's place in the middle of June. I'm really excited to see it. Yeah. There are some incredible magic theaters around. So for those folk around the country, check out them somewhere. Yeah. Somewhere in your state, there will be a magic theater.
Yeah, and you will find that they're being advertised all over the place. But when you find one, support it. You know, we need to really encourage these things because there's even a little organization of magic theater owners now. So we're actually getting that established. So there's more than one or two around.
Oh, there's lots of us. Mm. So the bottom line, to your question, was... Sadly, it's not all about the show, Mark.
Who's Mark? He's not even here.
It's not all, you know, the show is almost the easy bit. It is the venue. It's putting the bottoms on seats. It's selling those tickets.
Yeah.
And we have loved that journey. But
we have learned so much. And I would absolutely say this, if anyone out there is interested in learning about it, we're very happy to jump on a Zoom with you for an hour or something and share some information.
We started the soiree in 2018. We probably spent 2 years before literally traveling the country looking at different models. We went to California Dinner Show, tiny, tiny little place up the coast of California. We went to House of Cards was then.
Smoke and Mirror, Castle, obviously, Chicago Magic Lounge.
We went to Monday Night Magic. We looked at some of the people who just literally run their own place that you'd never know about and looked at the different business models. What was feasible? What could we afford? What could we do? We didn't have backers.
And you know, one of the things we learned about the key part to actually start the ball rolling is not to decide what you want to do show-wise, is to find a venue. When you find a room which you can put a show on, you can actually say, what kind of show can we put on in this room? So you may have the best parlor show ever, and then you turn up and the room is only suitable for a close-up show. So if you've been working on the show rather than being aware of the room, you know, you've wasted a lot of time. So I think key is finding a room. And when you find a room, then you work out what kind of show is going to work best in that room. Because the room we found was an upstairs room in a restaurant. So we were led towards putting on a dinner show. That was what we've been doing for the last 8 years.
And for us as well, there was this aspect of bringing in those close-up magicians, British highlighting the close-up magicians. We've seen those at the lounge, amazing. The castle, they've got their own room. We wanted to highlight local folk and also help them move their acts forward to maybe to be a parlor show or a stage show. And I think over the 8 years or something, we've achieved that.
Well, this is where we've achieved it to the point where I have discovered I am no longer indispensable.
Sweet. That's a double negative there.
It was rather good. A few weeks ago, I'll tell you the backstory. A few weeks ago, we were half an hour before going to do the show. We were okay. The van was loaded because we had lights and stage and PA systems and all this stuff. So we were going, and my back was twinging. I thought I had a kidney infection. So I thought I'd just pop to the urgent care to get some antibiotics, and I'll see you there. It'll be fine. But I get there, and the emergency room, they say, no, we think you've probably got a kidney stone. You've got to go straight into hospital and get a CT scan. Now, you know, we are now like an hour before the show is due to start. And unfortunately, in that period of time that I've been sitting in the waiting to see the doctor, it started to snow. And when it starts to snow, old people like to go out and fall over. I don't know why they do this. But when I got to the hospital, it was like a war zone. And I was thinking, get in there, get the CT scan. I still got time to do the show. And I get in there and we're being triaged and everything. Cut a long story short, I didn't get out of hospital till 11:30. I was fine. Not that anybody cares.
You'd like to say anything, darling.
They just went on and did the show.
Said, you know, Dragon, what can you do? He went back to my house and went through Keith's magic props and came out with a bunch of stuff. A guy called Joe Chasney. He happened to have his kids show in the back as well and extended.
He took a couple of things out of his kids show that he could do for adults.
But these guys now are accomplished because they've been working with us, having that stage time.
Yeah.
And they can pull anything out.
One thing we didn't mention was from the get-go when we started, one of the close-up guys always got 15 minutes in the stage show as well. So, you know, they took it in turns. It was on a rotation. And so a lot of them, we've managed to give them experience that they wouldn't have had. They wouldn't have made that step without...
And the close-up they do is really more table magic, like restaurants. So in other words, the rest of the audience is not coming over to watch somebody or sit in the corner like in a close-up venue. They're actually going table to table and performing.
We have 8 round tables with 8 people sitting on each table, so a total audience of 64.
Right.
And every table sees 3 close-up magicians sort of... It's a buffet meal, so they see one before the meal and then 2 after the meal. That's kind of the first half of the evening.
Now, another thing is when you're talking about the importance of finding a venue and then kind of fitting the magic to the venue, and this is coming to a good point where a lot of times you might find this is a perfect match, and it seems like a match made in heaven because they love you, you love them, the audience is going to be great, and then all of a sudden new owners come in or there's new management. And they're going to say, you know, this really isn't working out for us.
Twice it's happened with us now. Twice.
Oh my.
But the first time if it went...
The point is that you adapt, don't you? Mm. If as magicians we can do anything, we've got to adapt. We've got to adapt to what's going on. And as performers on stage, we know what it's like. You have to adapt. And so we've adapted a business model and we've adapted a show. As Keith said, it's happened twice. And now it's time to move on from this venue. And I think for us, we're going to drop the meal aspect.
Yeah.
We're not chefs. We're not interested in the food.
No.
There's a restaurant there, but
we're going to have close up magic in the hotel bar, so people will still see the close up magicians, and they can buy a meal from the hotel bar if they want to. And then we've got a 50 seat showroom which we're going to be moving into, so we'll be able to have this little show there, and we're going to do it hopefully twice an evening.
And so have you always? had it just you and then the local magicians, or do you have feature out of town performers?
We do.
Yeah, we do.
People have come through.
We've had David Goldrake's come in.
Steve Valentine,
Dan Sperry.
What's his face? Gorgeous. What's a doodle with the butterfly?
Did you say Jeff Hobson had come through?
Jeff Hobson did
come through. He didn't perform. He just wanted to watch.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I think we can get Jeff back. I think Jeff would quite like it.
Yeah.
Get involved.
Yeah.
Oh, Andre Panishka came through, butterfly card guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing is, you know, if people are willing to kill a bit of time, they come from us and they go on to Chicago, or vice versa, they come from Chicago on to us. Right. There are some sort of routes that some of the big names sort of work their way through. They know where they're going.
Yeah.
They work their ways around corporates. And that works. That's a great thing.
Yeah, the people who are on the road often, they just say, I'm in the area. Or sometimes there's a lecturer coming through and they do a lecture. There's two or three magic clubs in Michigan that are good lecturers. So they're in the state doing the lectures. So they do sort of Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday lectures. And when we were doing two nights, because for a while we had Friday and Saturday nights, which hopefully we'll be doing again in the future, they come and spend two nights with us before going to the next state where they're doing some more lectures. I mean, you know what the lecture thing's like, Scott. I mean,
sure.
Yeah.
So whenever they're going to be coming through again, you were just actually having the venue open at least one night a week, or sometimes two nights then a week. I think that's another thing is continuity. If someone's going to be having a venue, it's hard to say, okay, we're going to be on the third Thursday and then the next month it's going to be on the second Tuesday, because if you're trying to get people to continue to return, which is what I'm sure you have a lot of return business in, which people say, I'm going to bring my neighbor or my kids whatever.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And you're absolutely right there. That was the first few years we just do it very sporadically. I think in 2019 we only, you know, half a dozen shows.
Yeah, was it 2018 we did our first show. 2019 I think we did about six shows.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing them once a month.
Yeah, and then 2020 we went up to almost every Saturday.
I think actually 2020 there was a bit of a shutdown.
And then, yeah. Well, that's right. We just agreed to take on every Saturday, and that was when the shutdown happened.
Right.
But, you know, that aside, when we restarted again, things got going really, really quickly, because we learned a lot in that first year or so of doing the clubs. And, you know, one of the things which is a good tip that I would give to anyone is try and do the first Thursday of the month or the first Friday of the month.
And then people know. You're right. You need that continuity. And it's a bit like ticket sales. I mean, we have long discussions about how to sell tickets. What's the best way? There are so many platforms out there. You've got to find what's right for you. And in our area, it's Eventbrite, of all things.
Mm-hmm.
People love Eventbrite. So that's fine. They know what they're doing there. Some folk like Christian and Catalina have got their own
platforms to sell ticket sales.
Tickets in Indianapolis. And they've been doing their show in a hotel for years.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, if you're ever in Indianapolis, go and see their show, because they have got it down to a fine art. They really have, yeah.
But it's also been great, you know, people coming out to try stuff. We had Michael Dodon up, who's just full Penn and Teller. You know, it's a great time to also try some stuff for some of these established acts.
Well, you're right. There are so many different venues that are open, and we had, Keith, you and I talked about the one in San Antonio that's not too far from me here, from where I am in the Austin area.
Yeah.
As one particular venue in which they encourage visiting magicians. Well, in fact, I think I was going to say Scott Peppard probably does quite a bit there.
Actually it's pretty much all visiting magicians now.
Pretty much now. I think it's converted.
Magic Saloon. It's been rebranded as the Magic Saloon, and it's opening very, very soon. And we're doing that one in a few weeks' time.
We're doing that in July.
July we'll be down visiting. Mm-hmm. San Antonio in July.
But lots of others. I had spoken with someone some years ago who actually had a venue in his garage somewhere in California. So what I'm saying, I guess, for people who might be listening to this and thinking, well, I can't get someplace like in Branson or in Pigeon Forge or wherever, you know, or Las Vegas, but you don't need to necessarily find a hotel. I think you could find something, again, like in your backyard, in your garage, you know.
There was someone in California that was doing it in their backyard. I don't know if it's the same one as you're thinking.
Could be.
They started literally doing it in their backyard. They got all the neighbors round for the first one. The neighbors said, it's great, you've got to do it again.
And then he went.
And it actually became a monthly show, and they were selling out, and I think they've moved into a venue now. But yeah, it started off literally in their backyard.
Well, I mentioned Pigeon Forge because you had worked then with Bill Gladwell some years ago, and that was the last time that we did.
That was my first foray into doing promoting my own show, which later on Sarah came in and joined me in that show, and that was the start of us working together. So without that, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing now. That was very much part of our growth into sort of promoting our own show.
3 years in Tennessee.
3 years in Gatlinburg.
Gatlinburg.
Yeah, it wasn't in Pigeon Forge. Sorry, right. Gatlinburg. That's right.
Yeah. But it was a learning experience, and I think all these things. I suppose that's the way we've lived our lives. Is whatever we do, we learn something, and then the next thing we bring that knowledge with us, and we apply what we can apply, and disregard what doesn't relate.
People have come through as well that, you know, they genuinely want to try something new. Carissa Hendricks came through
in the very early days of Lucy. Mm-hmm. She came through, yeah.
And a great platform to try new material, folk, and work established material and try new angles on it.
Well, now that is a good point, because I recall in the Magic Island when I had worked there, one time Lance Burton had come in and he was working on what at the time was his new thing at the Monte Carlo, where he was doing a sword fighting with this other guy in a dark mask and everything, and then they switched places, and then Lance took off the mask and everything. But he was working that out at the Magic Island there in Houston. So there are these venues that you can use as places to rehearse, and not necessarily be bad, but I'm saying rehearse and actually fine-tune your
act. I had a phone call today from one of our guys that's just working on a new routine, and he said he wants to do it at Michigan Magic Day, and he said, is it possible that we can squeeze him into the Magic Soiree so I can have a dry run in front of an audience of non-magicians? And it's like, yes, of course, it's going to be fantastic.
Just contacted me and said, hey, you know, can I try out my FISMAT before I get to Italy? Sadly, we can't work the dates up, but I'm so excited that he's trying his routines and he's getting out there to these theatres to try them out.
Sure.
It'd be exciting to see him in Italy.
Yeah.
It'd be good.
We could see him in Italy.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing the IBM convention in Houston, and you should too. Sorry, I just thought I'd do an advert.
And that's going to be when, July the...
I think it's the 7th to the 11th. It's the week before FISM. I should have all this stuck on a wall in front of me on post-it. Unfortunately, there isn't a wall in front of me, so I couldn't do that.
I know you just got your table in front of you. I've been to your house. I'm not going to be at the IBM convention because I'm going to be departing, I think, on the 8th, heading to Italy and going to Venice, spend a few days, and then Milan.
See, another person letting us down.
Yeah, quite.
That's what I'm good at. I'm really good at letting down
people. Rubbish, Scott. No, you could cram in both.
Yeah, you can squeeze in.
You can get to the IBM and still get out for the opening ceremony.
All you're giving up is time to get over jet lag, and who needs that?
That's true. That's true. Good point. Well, listen, thank you guys very much. I'm glad, Sarah, that you had made it in and helped to make this a sweeter, much better kind of podcast. Otherwise, we would have just been that guy.
I am that guy.
That guy. Keith is that guy.
At the IBM convention last year when we were taking over the competition, we got introduced as Lady Sarah and her husband.
That's good.
I'm on the exec committee for the IBM. Don't I deserve some respect?
And Mr. Fields.
Yeah. No, I didn't even get that.
Did that.
Her husband is all I got.
That's funny.
So much more.
I'm not bitter.
Well, times have changed. And as I said, I spoke with you and Bill many years ago back when you were in Gatlinburg, but I've not talked with Sarah about this. And that, of course, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. And so I always end by asking my guests what it is that you're important to you. What is your magic word? And I don't mean abracadabra.
I think I can definitely say what my magic word at the moment is.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
Health.
Love it.
Yeah. We need to think about our health. It's very easy just to carry on and
be healthy.
That's my magic word at the moment.
I can fully appreciate that, my brother. How about you, Sarah?
I think my is laughter, really.
Laughter.
It's laughter, to have some laughter.
I said the same thing. Laughter. I'm sorry, I said laughter. Laughter.
It's pretty.
I'm thinking lofting a football, and lofting, laughter.
Laughter, sorry. Laughter. I work on my accent.
Well, hang on a second.
It's so you won an award for speaking. You
know? It's the English language.
It's pretty crummy out there right now, Scott, and you need some laughter. Yeah. And I don't underestimate what's going on in the world, but we need some laughter.
Mm. We do. And now's the perfect time for good health, good laughter, good golly. This has been a great chat. Thank you guys both for being my guests this week. You bet. We'll be seeing you down the road. In fact, we'll be seeing you at the 4F convention, and we'll be probably chatting there also, giving some daily reports on what's going to be going on from there. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Keith Fields and the Lady Sarah. This is Scotty out. Thank you, Keith and Sarah. I appreciate you being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast, and also for all of the tips and advice you had given, not only on contests, but also on theaters, and for people who might be interested in going out and presenting their show in their local area as well. So I wish you nothing but the best of continued success and whatever you guys are going to be doing and wherever you're going to be going with this next venture, the Magic Soiree, since you said you just had to move it again. And you've already had this happen a couple of times. Anyhow, I want to also thank all of you listeners for coming back this weekend for listening and tuning in. And next week, we're going to be going to Buffalo, New York, where we're going to be giving you daily reports from the 4F convention. That's Fechter's Finger Flicking Frolic. And we should have just a great time. This is going to be kind of a few back-to-back conventions, because after I get back from that, we'll be going off to another convention, which will be the Collectors Expo in Las Vegas. And that's going to be fun because we get to see David Copperfield's collection, his private museum. And then after that, I'll be attending the Abracornadabra in Des Moines, Iowa for the first time. Steve Daly has been telling me what a wonderful time this is, as have many other people, and saying, man, you really got to go to this convention. Okay, well, Steve's twisted my arm, so I'm going to go and show up and be at this event. So I'm looking forward to that one. So that's going to be happening over the next ensuing 3 weeks. And speaking of conventions, one last reminder to go to posemagicconference.com, where you'll find more information about their convention coming up on August 21st through the 24th. You'll want to check it out. It's going to help your magic in so many different ways. I also am going to be having a number 900, which is a milestone episode that's going to be coming up, and I'm going to delay that until after these conventions are over. And if you have subscribed to the Podletter, then you will find out who that person is who is going to be my featured guest on that 900th episode. And if not, go out right now. Then do it. Subscribe to the Podletter. Thank you guys and gals again for coming back from week to week and listening to this podcast and helping make us what we are today. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and take care of yourself and have good health. And one way of doing it is through laughter. I think laughter cures a lot of ills in the world. So let there be laughter in your life and good health. This is Scotty out.